You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and welcome along to the William Hill Racing Podcast. We're going to look ahead to Wednesday's racing on this edition. You'll hear it all live on Racing Radio from 1:20pm with Sam Turner, Gary Capewell and Catherine Fry in the studio. We've got racing on the turf at Nottingham, two national hunt meetings, one from Worcester and Wetherby, and action on the all weather at Kempton in the evening. So once again, something for everybody to look forward to on Wednesday. And joining me, Mark Walton, in the studio is Rory Delaghi. How are you, Rory?
I'm very well, thank you, Mark.
Good man. Quite a few stories surrounding the jumps knocking about at the moment. Obviously, the jump season not too far away from kicking in proper now. And are you starting to change your attention a little bit now?
Yeah, for me, traditionally, that the meeting we had at Chepstow on Saturday, although it's no longer on terrestrial TV, that used to be the first jumps meeting of the autumn that the BBC covered back in the good old days, when the feature race was the Mercedes-Benz Handicap Chase, which Paul Nicholls won a couple of times in a horse called Broadheath. And it was that, and around the same time, maybe a week later, the first ITV or Channel 4 meeting of the season was the Charisma Records Gold Cup at Kempton. So that was always the start of the jump season for me. So having seen that again, that's you know, put me fully into jumps mode.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose people that are clinging on to the flat, if you like, will probably concentrate on Champions Day, and then it all changes, really, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, of course, things have changed in the last 20-odd years, the Breeders' Cup becoming a much bigger thing.
Yeah.
And we still got some things to look forward to, and there will always be something. We're more interested in international racing now, the Melbourne Cup coming up in November, and international racing in Hong Kong. And then not long after that, we can look forward to the Dubai Carnival. So those who are really focused on high-end flat racing always have something to look forward to. But we're getting into winter now, Mark, and the winter boys deserve their fun.
Yes, just while you mentioned Hong Kong there, so I've seen this morning that Ryan Moore's going out to ride there for 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Well, he's fresher than he would normally be, given the injury he picked up mid-season. So be interested to see how he gets on out there. It'll certainly not do him any harm.
No, it won't. Let's stick with some jump stories then. I suppose the big one is Donald McCain. He's lost 50 runners. Paul and Claire Rooney have taken them away from his stable, which is his main benefactor, really, those two.
Yeah, so. the major owners in his yard now for the last couple of seasons, and it has to be a big body blow. It's not enormously surprising news. Obviously, it's a minor shock, but there have been ongoing discussions among the likes of you and me as to is all well in Camp McCain? Are they getting the results they should do? The answer has clearly been no in recent seasons. And he has lost one or two high-profile owners before this. But the Rooneys were really holding that yard up to a large degree. And it'll be very interesting to see how things pan out, both for the owners and the trainer, and indeed the yards that these horses go to. I would have thought Ben Pauling has a runner for the Rooneys tomorrow, ex-Paul Nicholls horse, Cotto Stone.
Yeah.
And he will get a few more. Kim Bailey might get a few. Interestingly, the name I think that will start cropping up more in the next year or so is one Jason Maguire, not training at the moment,
right?
Waiting to come back to the saddle. But you know, I would have thought Jason's had two very bad injuries now in the last couple of seasons, and I think he's probably a fairly major cog there already in terms of potentially sourcing horses and advising the Rooneys. And it'd be interesting to see if Jason decides that he wants to take up training in his own right, because if he does, I think he would immediately get 20-odd horses from them. So there's been no hint of that thus far. It's just me thinking out loud and thinking that would be a logical progression. It'd be also very interesting to see what Don McCain does, because I think he's been stuck in no man's land, trying to compete with the big guns, but not having quite the same resources. It would have been easier for him if the Rooneys wanted a quarter of the horses they had, but were happy to pay top whack for them.
Yeah.
You know, and picking up genuine contenders for Cheltenham Honours, whereas he's had to buy at a slightly cheaper level, but at the same time, the outlay has been huge for the Rooneys. And I think the pool that he's been dipping into is a difficult one to produce top-class horses, whereas there's always something expected of them. And the returns that he's got will go down as disappointing. Ironically, if he decides to sort of pull back and operate like his legendary father did before him and start training for smaller owners and getting back to basics, to coin a phrase, he might just rediscover his mojo.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting if he does, because, three or four years ago, he could do no wrong, and it's kind of escalated into this huge number of horses.
He almost did too well in a couple of seasons. He had his first Cheltenham Festival winner, only his second season training with White Oak in the Mares Hurdle. And then he had a couple of very, very good horses come along in Tim Leslie's colours. And everyone thought that he was the heir apparent, that he genuinely was in a challenging position against the likes of Nicky Henderson and Paul Nicholls. But that was never realistic, to be honest. And unfortunately, that meant that however well he did, he was always going to be deemed to be a failure to some degree. And now at least the pressure is off him. He can re-examine what he's doing and look to see how he wants to pitch his business. And, you know, it might just be the kick he needs, really.
Mm. Well, we'll see how that goes. A bit of other news for the jumps as well. They're introducing a triple crown in honour of, well, they named it after Corto Star. £1 million up for grabs for any horse who wins the Betfair Chase, the King George and the Cheltenham Gold Cup, which Corto did himself in 2007, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, so. And he won £1 million then. The sponsors of the first of those races put up £1 million for the treble, but they find they didn't quite get the exposure that they wanted out of it. And half the issue with that is they, as a bookmaker sponsor, they couldn't promote the event at the Cheltenham Festival.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been the perfect day to do it, but of course, the every day of the Cheltenham Festival has a flagship bookmaker sponsor, and they get exclusivity on that day, which has always been the nature of things at Cheltenham. And of course, that meant that, you know, Gold Cup Day was always going to be about the tote on the day, and you couldn't really be seen to be stealing any of their thunder. Now that Jockey Club Racecourses have got behind it, they've got the clout to promote it as much as they want. They can make that day all about, you know, if there is a contender, if Vautour, for example, comes to the Friday of Cheltenham next year, having won the Betfair Chase and the King George, then there's an awful lot of song and dance about that. Mm. It might even be bigger news than Victoria Pendleton. Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the main thing, isn't it, this year? They've put the money up because they will be able to run with it as much as they like at Cheltenham, because they're not a rival bookmaker.
Exactly. So. And the other thing you have about it this season, the one thing that Betfair did wrong in the first place was they did it at a time when there was an absolutely outstanding chaser coming to the peak of his powers. And, you know, if you go back through history, there are very few horses who could, obviously, that the first of those races doesn't have that legacy. It replaced the Edward Hanmer, I think, back in the day, so he didn't have quite the same cachet to it. But not many horses have been able to do the King George Gold Cup double, for example. And to throw another race in there at a different track again, a flat left-handed track, means you need something special. But what you have this year, you have a really strong bunch of contenders. And if you can get them together three times through the season, then you've got a huge amount of headlines. There'll be no one-sided races. And there's a fair chance that £1 million is safe. But at the same time, you can be seen to be getting maximum exposure out of it, because there are 4, 5, 6 horses that, you know, people will take sides and think that potentially there are a few of these who are potentially the best we've seen in a long time. They've got to come, this crop's got to come a little bit further than that to eclipse the likes of Corto Star, a long way indeed, because Corto Star was a really outstanding horse. But there is the possibility that one of a very, very promising novice crop last season, including last year's Gold Cup winner, remember, could just take things to the next level.
There really were some exciting novices last year.
Absolutely, and it was one of those that every day you get really excited by one. That's next year's Gold Cup winner. And then the next day you see another one winning. Well, that was more impressive than the previous one.
Yeah.
And then unusually this year, on the Friday of Cheltenham, which is not meant to be a day the novices star, Coney Greer came out and won the Gold Cup in stunning style.
Yeah.
And beat a relative novice into second as well, Jack Adam.
Yes. 10-1 anyway for any horse to win it this year, the Triple Crown. Would that tempt you?
I think you would need a bigger price. It's one of those that it's a very difficult one to price up, because if you knew that one of the leading contenders, particularly one of Willie's, was going to be primarily aimed at winning that bonus, then you'd be quaking in your boots as a bookmaker. But While Rich Ritchie would love to win £1 million, it's probably less important to him on its own than the grander scheme. So whether that becomes a target for one horse from the yard, I don't know.
All right. Well, let's move on anyway. Just back to the flat gamers now as we're yo-yoing between the two at the moment. Champions Day coming up this weekend. Anything on the shortlist so far?
There are plenty of interesting ones, it has to be said. I've got a sneaking feeling that the Corsican can run well in the Champions Stakes, with the ground liable to ride good. Weather forecast is fine up until the weekend. The going's liable to be good or very close to it, which, getting on to the QE2, which is probably arguably the feature race, because you've got this long-awaited clash between Solo and Glen Eagles.
Yeah.
It might eventually happen. Some people will suggest that Tim O'Brien will be praying for good weather so Glen Eagles can run. And some cynics might be suggesting that they'll be praying for torrential rain so they've got an excuse not to run. It's becoming a little bit of a saga whether we see Glen Eagles on the racetrack.
Where will we see him? Yeah, because if he doesn't go there, they mention the Breeders' Cup. Then Golden Horn's going to scare them away there, isn't he?
Well, if he goes. Theoretically, they won't be scared of anyone, but you do have your concerns now. Although, the chances are that there were more politics at play when he didn't run at Goodwood without a really good excuse. He came out because of the ground there, but before declarations.
Yeah.
And with enough time for the ground to have dried up, and indeed it had dried up by the first day. So we'll see what happens with him. But if that clash comes off, it'll be very interesting. But being cynical, you're inclined to wait until the day and see if it does happen. The Champion Sprint's very interesting and very open. The interesting horse in that now is the Tin Man, who's come from nowhere really, but was hugely impressive here on his last start. The irony of that was that he had been in this race, Ante-Post, and was taken out of it the day before. So clearly surprised his connections by how well he won. You would expect a lot of improvement from him as well. And it's interesting that that James Fanshawe has swallowed his pride and had the horse supplemented. And it's not like he comes from one of the mega bucks owners either. I don't know a huge amount about it's Fred Archer Racing who own him. I don't know a huge amount about the syndicate, but it would have taken a little bit of would have taken plenty of guts to stick him back in the race, having taken him out. It would have been a lot easier for a trainer, even if he thought that the horse had a chance, to justify the decision to pull him out in the first place and say, listen, it comes a year or two early for him, give him time to develop. But he's back in the race again, and the way he won last time out marks him down as potentially top class. So it's a really competitive-looking race on paper. But again, the issue we always have with the sprinters is there's not one outstanding performer in there, and the Tin Man might just be the big gamble of the day.
The Tin Man, 9-1 with us at the moment. Got all that to look forward to at the weekend. Now let's concentrate on matters a little bit closer to hand, because we've got action coming up on Wednesday. Rory's picked out four races for us, and we'll get his thoughts on the back of this.
William Hill Racing Radio. It's everything to give you the inside track.
Right, we're going to look at some of the racing at Wetherby and one race at Nottingham. So rather than going through them in time order, we'll go through them in meeting order. And we'll start with the 410 at Nottingham, which is a Class 3 handicap over a mile and a quarter. It's for three-year-olds and older, a field of 14 here. And it's going to be quite an open betting here as well, Rory, I imagine.
It is. There are a couple who are clearly capable of better than we've seen. Royal Impulse being the most obvious improver. He's only had the three starts in handicaps, having won his maiden at this track on softish ground in May. And he shaped like a winner in waiting when runner-up at Salisbury last time out, being beaten less than three lengths by Think Ahead. Probably wasn't helped by the fact that it was rather a stop-start gallop that day. They didn't get as stretched out as they might have. He was strong at the finish without being able to show a turn of foot. The likelihood of a decent pace here will suit him, and he's going to be popular. He looks maybe the most likely favourite on paper, and as a course and distance winner from a yard that's in very good form, there are plenty of ticks in the right boxes for him. But as long as the ground is genuinely soft, and it is, it's good to soft in places as we speak. I don't know whether it's nice weather here at the moment. If the sun's beating down in Nottingham, it might dry out a little bit. But La Hayeb is a filly who loves to get her toe in. She's run respectably here on fast ground before, but her last two runs have come here. She won a handicap off a mark of 70 on soft ground in May. And then she came back off a break to be a very good second here last time out, behind Reddy. That was a sound performance. It was a race that this yard, Michael Appleby, had won a couple of times in the past, including with the November handicap winner a few years ago. And I thought it was very significant that he was laying her out for that race. Sometimes you see a horse who's off for that length of time and you think it must have had a problem. But looking at his modus operandi, my impression was that La Hayab was specifically being aimed at that race. And here she is running again a week later at the track. Some people will suggest that she might bounce just a week after that run. But if she'd always been on the go and was just being teed up for that run, then it shouldn't be an issue for her. And her last two runs are absolutely rock solid on paper. She finds plenty for pressure. She clearly stays the mile and a quarter well. As I said, her win came over a mile, but she's by High Chaparral out of a De Lamy mare, and you'd expect a mile and a quarter or further to be her best trip. She might even be one for the November handicap down the line. It might be a mixed plan to get her high enough in the weights that she would get into that contest. And I see no reason why she won't run a race again. So I thought, I've looked, seen the tissue for this, and she's put in about 9 or 10 to 1, and I thought that was too big. Again, if she starts favourite for it, then you know I've misread the market. But she does look to have claims as good as anything in the book. She's liable to improve further as well. So for me, she's the only one I'd want to be with, and she should be an each-way price. Just to touch on one or two others, Aliator of Sir Mark Prescott's also has strong form, but his best form has come in the all-weather. He's a horse I was working when he won at Carlisle in July, and I thought he was one to follow on the back of that. Everything seemed wrong for him that day. The trip was wrong. The way the race was run was wrong. But he grinded out. Unfortunately, his two runs on turf since, he's been very disappointing. Before absolutely bolting up back on the all-weather at Wolverhampton last time. He does have an all-weather pedigree. He's by Blame, who won the Breeders' Cup Classic a few years ago. And I don't think he'll be at his best here.
OK, a few to consider there then, but main selection would be La Hayab if it's an each-way price.
Absolutely.
Moving on to Wetherby next, then three races from there. The 3.50 at Wetherby is where we start. This is a Class 3 handicap chase. It's over 2 miles and 3 furlongs. And we'll start here with last year's winner, Foundation Man, who struggled after winning this race last term, but he's back down to, well, £5 below his winning mark in this last year, so it should be somewhere about, if teed up.
Yeah, he is a horse who can go well fresh, but I have to say, the signs have not been good for Foundation Man since that. I do quite like a horse with this sort of profile who's lost his way a little bit. But he's a huge horse, and he's got he's definitely got some sort of physical issues. He doesn't seem to be able to carry himself through his races more often than not. This track suits him because he's got a big stride. The big fences at Wetherby suit him. But the fact that it doesn't put an awful lot of emphasis on stamina is also in his favour, but he's not had too many excuses of late. Well beaten in a couple of runs at Worcester, and just beginning to look a bit sour in his races, which is a worry. I've always thought that the fact that he folded quite badly in a few of his races was because he had some sort of wind problem, or the fact that he just doesn't have the strength to carry his massive frame. He's probably the biggest horse in John Joe's yard, although I saw one at Worcester last week that was absolutely monstrous. It was twice the size of everything else in the paddock. But again, it didn't run a particularly good race either. So he might bounce back, and a few people will be switched on to him because John Joe's a shrewd trainer, and he slipped to a mark of 122, and he looks very well handicapped. But he's one that I would have to be wary of at this stage, I'm afraid.
All right, so what do you like in opposition then?
The obvious ones against him, Village Vic, Upepito, and Final Assault. Village Vic was well beaten on his final start last season, but he's a horse who's never carried his form through the year. He's quite a nervy type. I've seen him quite a lot in the paddock at Cheltenham in the past, and he's a horse who lives on his nerves a little bit. He tends to grind his teeth walking around the parade ring, get himself a bit wound up, and he always tends to, a lot of horses like that who are nervy, tend to run well fresh, and then the more they race, the more they get affected by those nerves. And his form has always sort of tailed off towards the end of the season. He didn't win first time out last season, but that was his first run for quite a long time. He'd come off an injury layoff, which is unusual for him. Now he's had the best part of a full season behind him. He has a standard break between seasons. I expect him to be at his best, and he should go well. The question is how well he jumps. His jumping was poor at Haydock. But I'm inclined to forgive him that because he'd been pretty good in the jumping department when winning at Newbury, and this track and these fences should suit him as well. So we would just about be the pick. although I've got to give a couple of positive mentions to the others. Yu Pepito has his first start for Dan Skelton and runs in a tongue tie for the first time. This is a standard ploy from Dan Skelton. He was interviewed about this last season and said, as far as he was concerned, tongue tie was always beneficial, pretty much always beneficial to a horse. Sometimes it made very little difference, sometimes it made a big difference. So he was inclined to give a horse a try on a tongue tie first, and only if they seemed to react badly to it, he would take it off. So a lot of the new horses he gets run with a tongue tie. And Yu Pepito, he's well handicapped as well. He's £2 higher than when winning at Warwick in January for Venetia Williams. Venetia had a poor season by her standards. Everyone expected her to clean up in January and February when the ground was really soft. And whereas the previous season, she had a tremendous strike rate. Last year, she did poorly. And I just wonder whether a few of her horses are well handicapped as a result. And this is one that's made the move. He's still lightly raced as a seven-year-old. And Dan has now finally hit form. He had a very quiet summer. His strike rate was fairly poor, but in the last 2 or 3 weeks, it's upped markedly. So that's a big danger. And it's worth mentioning Final Assault for Lucinda Russell. His penultimate effort was a very good second behind Oscar Rock. Oscar Rock has always been very highly regarded and was a winner at Market Raisin a couple of weeks ago. Final Assault then went to Ayr for his final start and was tried over 3 miles but didn't stay. He's better than that result suggests. And if he's ready to go after 6 months off, he's got chances as well. But reading between the lines, I will stick with Village Vic.
Village Vic, the selection in the 350 at Weatherby. Then moving on to the 425 at Weatherby next. And this one is a Class 3 handicap hurdle over 2 miles and 5 furlongs. Several interesting ones returning from breaks in this as well. But we'll start with the race fit one, if you like. Crazy Jack, who was quite impressive on his reappearance last time.
He was. And he's helped Kim Bailey to do well in as part of a decent run at the moment. He was a winner over fences at Market Raisin in April, disappointed in that sphere in his next start where he didn't jump particularly well, and his jumping has been an issue over the larger obstacles. But the return to hurdles helped him last time at Worcester. The slight concern with him here is that Worcester has those mini fences, which I think is probably ideal for him. He's been jumping the bigger ones, not jumping terribly well, but the mini fences that they have at Sutherland Worcester are probably ideal for him. Whether he's quite as good over standard timber hurdles remains to be seen. And of course, he's off a mark now that will require a career best for him. So he's worth considering, but I think he's beatable.
All right. Since you have something else in mind then here, Rory.
Again, I'll mention a couple that are interesting coming back from a break. Walk on Al is another for Dan Skelton. Harry Skelton, again, takes the ride. He's another one who hasn't really taken to fences. Two runs over the big obstacles this time last year. Saw him finish 5th of 10 and 3rd of 6. But prior to that, he'd been running in good quality novice hurdles. He was 4th in the River Don at Doncaster, which is a very competitive Grade 2. And his current mark of 124 over hurdles is lenient if you believe he's able to come back to the form that he showed there. He's still only a seven-year-old. He's been lightly raced in recent times. And again, he comes from a yard that will do particularly well at this time of the year. So fitness won't be an issue for him, despite the fact that he's been off for almost a year. He's worth considering. He's liable to be well-backed as well, though people don't miss the fact that Dan Skelton is good at producing horses like this. The other one that I'm going to mention before coming to my selection is Legla Royal for John Quinn. A horse who ran 4th in the EBF final at Sandown, always a very competitive novice's handicap. That was behind Asda May. That was a really tough race, as it is every year, and the fact that he pulled up over the same course and distance in his final start is probably because he was still feeling the effects of that hard race beforehand. He will have benefited from the best part of 6 months off, and as another one you've got to bear in mind. As a four-year-old, he should improve further. But my selection is going to be, and hopefully at a decent price, Dr. Irv. For Mickey Hammond, a fairly useful stayer on the flat. He hasn't really pulled up any trees over hurdles, but he did catch the eye off this mark in a handicap at Market Raisin late last month, running on late in the day to finish 4th behind Handsome Dan without being knocked about too much. Now, he's a horse who will improve for a step up and trip, which he gets tomorrow. He is, on the basis of his flat form, he's well handicapped off a mark of 107. And that run, that last run, was the first time he's given an indication that he'd be capable of the same over hurdles as he was in the flat. So potentially well treated, liable to be ignored in the betting. And I'm hoping you get a decent price about him.
one with a decent price and potentially in the 425. And the final race we look at is the 455 at Wetherby. This one is a Class 3 handicap chase over just short of 2 miles and a field of 11 here. Rory, which one do you like in there?
I'll mention two. Once again, hopefully one at a big price I'm going to go for is Jack the Gent. His recent efforts don't read too well. He took an absolutely crashing fall at Southall 2 starts ago. He just didn't take it. Normally a very good jumper. He's a big horse who needs fast ground and is normally very bold at his fences. Very one-dimensional, needs to lead or he can't win. And he was being taken on for the lead. Richie McClernand was just trying to restrain him a little bit and they got their wires crossed and he took an absolute purler very early on at Southall. He was then ridden off the pace at Kelso last time out, essentially as a confidence restorer because he had that heavy fall. It was just a case of letting him school round and hoping he was okay. So the fact that he didn't lead in the first place meant he was never going to win that race. But he's got every chance of leading here. As far as I can tell, he's the only out-and-out front runner in the race. It's a big enough field, and he is back to a sharp 2 miles. But the key to him is getting off in front. This track suits him ideally. He wants a flat track and a good jumping test because he's a big, bold jumper. He can't deal with soft ground and he can't deal with trips in excess of 2.5 miles. So a lot of his moderate runs are very excusable. And it looks to me like he will, after that effort at Kelso last time out, he will be bounced out in front again. And if they leave him alone going to the first fence and give him 3 or 4 lengths, he'd be very hard to peg back. And yet, because he's an 11-year-old who's got moderate form figures in his last 2 starts, he's liable to go off at a double-figure price. The favourite will be Not Now Sam, I respect as a 4-year-old getting weights from his elders. But there's 2 things to bear in mind with him. I think he'll be a short price favourite. He won well on his chase debut at Warwick in May, but that race was dominated by 4-year-olds. 4-year-olds get an enormous allowance over fences in May. That allowance then gradually drops away. They get a pound less every 2 weeks from the start of July. So essentially, he's now getting £7 or £8 less than he would have been getting there on the weight for age scale, and he's £10 higher on the handicap as well. For me, that gives him a really tough task. And yet, because of his profile and because of his trainer, and he may be looking for treble at this stage, of course, as well, Dan Skelton, I think Not Nice Sam will be a very short price, but I think he's opposable.
Okay, interesting thoughts there. In the 4.55, let's just have a quick summary, Rory, if you'll spin us through your selections for Wednesday one more time.
La Hayeb in the 4.10 at Nottingham. Hopefully with soft ground and hopefully at an each-way price, but if not, then win only. In the 3.50 at Wetherby, I'll go for Village Vic over Upepito. The 4.25, Dr. Irv at a decent price, and also at a decent price in the 4.55 at Wetherby, Jack the Gent.
Superb. Thank you very much, Rory. Good luck and enjoy it on Wednesday.
Thank you.
There you go, the thoughts of Rory Delaghi on Wednesday's racing. You'll hear it all on Racing Radio from 1:20 p.m. Sam Turner, Gary Capewell and Catherine Fry will be the team in the studio. We've got racing on the turf at Nottingham, jumping from Worcester and Wetherby in all-weather action at Kempton. So do tune in for all of that. Thank you very much for listening to this William Hill Racing podcast and enjoy Wednesday's action.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.